Welcome to The Playful Creative, a place to explore how playfulness, art, curiosity, and creativity enrich the human experience. I'm your host, Sarah Moyle, a visual storyteller and creative catalyst. I'm endlessly curious about the ways people bring creativity, experimentation, art, and play into different areas of their lives. So listen in to learn from play experts, artists, musicians, scientists, and so many more interesting people. On this episode of The Playful Creative, we welcome Jacqueline Lloyd-Smith, founder and owner of Strategic Play. Jackie is a certified art and play therapist, visual coach, creative problem solver, author, and keynote speaker. One of only four original global LEGO Serious Play Master Trainers, Jackie has had a long-time partnership with the LEGO Group in Denmark. As a certified facilitator and trainer of facilitators in LEGO Serious Play methods, Jackie helps companies and governments solve some of their biggest problems by tapping into their team's innate creativity through play. Today, I'll ask her to share her background, what it was like pioneering a creative facilitation method before it was cool, and about her new play personality assessment, Playsonality. Along the way, Jackie and I drop knowledge about keeping employees engaged, setting up a workshop for success, building trust with clients, and ways to effectively market a service that is different from the status quo. So no matter who you are, where you're from, or how you like to be creative or playful, we're glad you're here with us today on The Playful Creative. Welcome, Jackie, to The Playful Creative. I'm so happy to have you here because you're one of my very favorite people.
Aw, that is so nice. You're one of my favorite people too. I was looking forward to this today.
Yeah. And it's really funny because I feel like I've known you for a super long time, but over half of that time has been pandemic time.
I know, but pandemic has been somewhat good to us. We've had lots of chats, so.
Yes, that's true. But today, I want to start by asking you to share a little bit about your background, because I think it's a really unique and interesting one.
Okay. Yeah. How far back do I go? When I was born? Or like my career?
Your career or anything else that you think is important to how you got to where you are today and what you're doing.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, like everyone's story, everything is a big circle. So it started after high school. I went to art school. So that was my beginning. And I thought I would be an artist and I would make money. And then I found out that it was really hard work. So somewhere along the way, I stumbled on art and play therapy. And I met a very supportive person who introduced me to that world. And that was a big career shift. So I started doing art and play therapy, and I was hired by a government organization, and I worked in the psychology department. And I was one of the few art therapists at that time, because it was, you know, I don't want to say how long ago, but we'll say late 80s. I was trained to be a psychometrist, so I sort of lived in that world of art and psychology, where the two could meet, and always use play as well as part of that work that I did. And then I ended up going out on my own and forming my own consultancy. And I went back to school. I did an MBA. And it was in the MBA that I thought, oh my goodness, I've gotten so far away from doing all the creative work that I loved. What am I going to be doing with this, you know, this degree in this business that I had started, a consultancy? And I discovered LEGO Serious Play. It was everyone in my class read the same. It was an economist article. The German economist had written this article about mergers and acquisitions, and it was on a reading list. And I actually read the entire article. And when I got to the end, it was just one paragraph on LEGO Serious Play. And it said that LEGO has invented an application to deal with, you know, people problems during mergers and acquisitions. They invited me to come and take their training. Back then, you had to be invited after they reviewed your website. So that's how I got into the Lego, into the field of Lego serious play.
I'm realizing we may not have given enough context for those who aren't familiar with Lego serious play. Let's take just a couple of minutes and just talk about what Lego serious play is.
Lego serious play was something that was developed by, it was a brainchild of the owner of Lego, Kalvkat Christensen. And Kald had an idea that a lot of people have, which is management consultants are really boring and meetings are really, especially strategy meetings, are painful. So he was thinking, look, we're a toy company. I wonder if we can do this with Lego. I don't even know what made him think of it, but what a clever idea. He got a hold of Johan Roos and Bart Vector, who were two industrial organizational psychologists that were wondering why strategy wasn't as sticky as it should be. And so they were doing some research. So he partnered with them and funded this project called Lego Serious Play. And they developed it under a different brand name because they were doing it sort of external of like from Lego. And then when they were getting great results, so it was developed initially for strategy. In the process of developing it, they realized that there are other valuable benefits that are coming out, like team collaboration, and teams are learning a lot more information about each other, not just strategy, but also how people think. So then they realized, okay, this is a great communication tool. It allows you to be able to see things in 3D. So when people are using Lego Serious Play, where you're not physically building like a hospital or a school or something, you are building metaphors to tell a story about something based on your own experience. And again, that word that I used earlier, the scaffolding, it's very important that when you do a Lego Serious Play workshop, that the scaffolding occurs so that people understand how to build with the Lego, but also how to create these stories, and then how to tell the stories in a way that helps other people hear them and understand them. And that is done in sort of, it's invisible. If you were in the workshop, you wouldn't even know it was happening, but a Lego Serious Play facilitator understands the nuances that adult learners need to go through in order to be able to get those kinds of results. So if I was going to say, what is Lego Serious Play? It's very, very core. You could say that it's a communication tool, but I would even go further and say it's a problem solving tool, because if you just need to communicate to somebody, you can write a letter or you can just talk to them. But if you really need to communicate to them at a deep level, where everybody is doing a concentrated amount of thinking about a specific topic, and you really need to squeeze all the brain power out of the people in the room, that's what Lego Serious Play does. So that's why I say it's a tool for creative problem solving and innovation.
And it engages people so deeply.
It does. And there's been quite a lot of, someone just sent me an article the other day, a scholarly written article about flow. And the Lego Serious Play is a pathway. Well, play, we'll start with that. Play is a pathway into a flow zone. And a flow, when people wonder, well, what is flow? That's when you lose track of time. Now, when your skill set and your mastery come together, then, and I'm going to add two more components to this flow zone, I would also say you have to have the right tools and equipment, and you also have to have time. So I don't think it's a two-way XY. I think there are four elements that need to happen. Because you could have the skills and you could have a problem in front of you, but if you don't have the right tools and if you don't have the time to tackle it, you're not going to be able to address it. So I think you have to have all those kinds of things. We always talk about place and state. So you have to be in the right place and you have to have the right state of mind. And when you have all those things together, that is when you enter into this deeper level of concentration. And when a group of people can do that together, this is where you get group genius or you get magic happening. And so Lego Serious Play, as far as I'm concerned, is the best way to get people into that zone.
And what I love about it too is for participants, it has a much lower barrier to entry than some of the other things that I've tried, like getting people to draw things. People don't have as much like emotional trauma and baggage around building things with Lego as they do drawing and being self-critical of what they're drawing. So I found I had been following similar kind of processes in my illustrative workshops that I did to the process that's used in Lego Serious Play, but I didn't have to spend nearly as much time being emotional support for the participants.
Yeah. I think that, we've tried everything. So we've done workshops with Play-Doh and modeling clay and, just using pictures. And of course, there's a place for all of that. There are times when those are the perfect tools. But the one thing that Lego has us nailed is that the Lego materials that we use are specifically made for storytelling and storytelling relatively quickly. The bricks only go together one way, and everybody can learn that very quickly. So there's not this steep learning curve where you got to figure out a software or you got to learn, something that's really abstract. Like I always found Meccano, great toy, but not for everybody. Whereas with Lego Serious Play, everybody, even people that have never touched it before, can quickly build something. And then as they start seeing how the stories are put together, the storytelling, we're all natural storytellers, that ability to tell a story then is enhanced so that people can make these really great stories.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. So you found out about Lego Serious Play. You went, you were invited, you went took the training. Then what happened?
So while I was at the training, I had a client the very next week that had hired me to do a strategy workshop. And of course, I was going to use a traditional strategy approach that you learn when, you get your MBA. And so I called them and I said, I am at this amazing training and this is what I'm learning to do. I'm wondering if you would be open to trying it. And the person that I called, wonderful lady, she said, yeah, we would, but why don't you just use it for like icebreakers? We'll just use it a little bit. So when I got back, I thought, perfect, this is what I'm going to do. I had some Lego. They gave me some Lego from the training, and I bought some more. And so I took the Lego with me, and I wasn't really sure what was going to happen. But I think that because I had used like these other creative tools already, that I was, I just walked in with the confidence of we're going to do this. And so I said, we're going to build everything out of Lego today. And people looked at me like, really? And so I think right away I think that people are curious enough that they're like, well, this is different. And there was not, I wouldn't say a warm welcome. I would say it was kind of like people were a little bit skeptical, but willing to try. And that's all I needed. But I had one or two people in the group that were really enthusiastic. And so after doing a few things at 10 o'clock, I think I said, we can keep going, or we could go and, get the flip charts out. And the woman that was one of the people that were there that was a big supporter and very enthusiastic said, no, let's keep going. I want to see how this works. And so I did show of hands, and almost everybody said, let's keep going with Lego. So at the end of the workshop, they had to determine who their new executive director was going to be. Well, not, they had to hire an executive director, and they wanted to have an agreement about who they were, what kind of a person they were looking for. And that was the workshop. At the end, they totally nailed it. And they also realized they had to go back to their funding agency and renegotiate their contract because they realized that there were some things they needed to change about the job description. So that was a huge outcome for them. And as I was cleaning up, I couldn't get rid of people. They were still following me around, asking me, like, how long have you been doing this? How did you learn to do it? Who have you worked for? Could you do more for us? And so I finally said to them, look, I'm supposed to send a case study back to Lego with a testimonial. Could I write it on this? And this was really early in the game. So I didn't even know how to take good pictures. I didn't know how to do anything. And so I had sort of a few pictures of just, you know, hands and Lego bricks or whatever I had. So anyhow, they said yes. So I wrote a case study. They gave me a testimonial, but more than that, they gave my name to a whole bunch of other people.
Uh-huh.
And that was really the magic key to, and then I started, because they were in economic development, I started doing tons of work within that container of economic development. But people within that industry are married to people that work at other places. Mm-hmm. And so other people then started to call. And so very quickly, I realized, okay, this is definitely leading edge, but there's an appetite for it. And so that's really how it got started.
And you are one of four original master Lego series play trainers, is that right?
Yes. So yes. That story is an interesting one as well. So Lego, and I'm trying to think of what year it was, but there was a conference that they needed somebody to go to, because, and in fact, it's a famous conference where, okay, so this will help kind of interesting for you, Sarah, because mm-hmm. I know you do this graphic facilitation around a kind of like a TED talk that Tim Brown did. Well, he presented at that conference. So Tim Brown presented, it was a serious play conference, and it was in Pasadena at the design school. And they had called it Serious Play. And of course, Lego had that name trademarked. So Lego called them and there was a conversation. And so they ended up being a sponsor. So Lego became a sponsor of the Serious Play conference. And so they needed somebody to go. And they asked me if I would go. So I went to the Serious Play conference and the Lego didn't show up.
Oh, no.
So I had called ahead of time and there was no Lego there. And I kept thinking, oh my gosh, what if I get there and the Lego doesn't show up? So I took the Lego with me. I filled my suit. I took two suitcases full of Lego. And then when I got there and the Lego wasn't showing up, finally, I got a hold of my contact at Lego and he was, oh no. And I said, well, I brought some with me. Should I just use what I brought? And he was like, oh, and it was like, thank goodness. So I had something like 45 Lego kits that I had taken. So we were able to run our little breakout workshop. And that worked out perfectly, because it would have been really bad. But I think Lego were really impressed that I was like had thought ahead to uh-huh. take the Lego. I was ready. And so at that conference, then I met quite a lot of people at that conference, and Lego then sent me to a few more things. So I had the opportunity to go to do the United Nations, the Leadership Summit in New York. But backing up, I think that I built a good, strong, trusting relationship with the people at Lego. And I think that people could see that, you know, I was a straight shooter. Mm-hmm. And so along the way, they asked me if I would start training. And in 2017, I started to train in the method of Lego Serious Play. And then by 2009, they appointed me to the Lego Training Board. And then on that board, so then I was training for Lego. We realized that there was a barrier to entry. So at that point, to become a Lego Serious Play facilitator, you had to buy a license, very expensive license, I think, mm-hmm. anyway. It was 3,000 euros a year.
Oh, wow.
Just to be able to use the name Lego Serious Play. And it came with a huge, you know, a lot of rules and a big, mm-hmm. thick contract and blah, blah, blah. So for management consultants to come up with, so that would have been about 5,000, you know, US back mm-hmm. then. To come up with that
every
single year. Plus, yeah. You always had to use brand new Lego. That was one of the rules.
Oh.
So on this training board, I worked with three other people and then the folks from Lego, and we adopted the new open source model. So that was where the open source model, because the first thing was we got to get rid of this license. The second thing was, do we always have to use brand new Lego? So then that opened the door for Lego to say, Jackie, we just want you to train under your own brand. Like, we're not going to do it anymore. Lego was not going to run the certification program. So then I started, we started to offer Lego Serious Play training, and it wasn't going to be a big thing. It was, I was going to do it once a year, maybe, or maybe twice a year. But again, the demand, and when we moved and started offering the training from Whistler, we found that people from all the, over the world were coming. So everybody knows where Whistler is. A lot of people want to go to Whistler. So it worked out really well. And yeah, and that was back in, trying to think now, 2017. So it was 2007 that I started to train for Lego. And then 2013, I started to train from Whistler. But and then in the period in between, I was just doing it from Vancouver. But the interesting thing was around that same time too, we started to do some work for Procter & Gamble and got named best in class at Procter & Gamble. So we did quite a lot of work for Procter & Gamble and went to Venezuela and did some work in Venezuela. And then also, and you know where the Innovation Center is because you've been there with me at Procter & Gamble. Yeah.
Very cool space.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You are also an author.
Yes.
You've written a few books around Lego Serious Play. You hosted for a few years in a row. How many years did you do the UnConference?
Oh, we did it 5 years before we got down with the nasty pandemic.
With COVID, I know. So it was loads of fun. Jackie would get all of, well, invite all the people that she had certified to come gather together for an UnConference, which is a conference with no agenda or very, very minimal agenda. And all of the participants are tasked with bringing interesting things to share. Yeah. So that was really cool.
Yeah, that was a really, that was definitely, I mean, I think we'll be doing those again soon. I think people are just kind of getting their legs back under them again. And but yeah, primarily we train in Lego Serious Play. So if people are looking for a certification, that's what we do. We also use Lego Serious Play, and we are constantly going out into the field to do workshops. The big thing that we're doing right now that I'm super excited about is Placenality. So we're blending, we're kind of hackers, you know, we're always using different things at different times and using them in different ways. And you know, keeping it fresh and testing things, we're prototyping, we're your typical design firm where we get an idea, we see a problem, we create something, we test it, and then we can, you know, we go through processes of continuous improvement in order to get the best product that we could make. And so just before the pandemic, we had the idea that we should create an assessment tool to measure how people enter into that place, that zone. So how to get into that, that Csikszentmihalyi's flow zone. We know that the gateway is play, but everybody plays differently. And so we noticed that in our workshops, different people would come on board sort of and be excited and enthusiastic at around different moments. And so we became kind of curious about why is that? And also, you know, how could we have something for everybody like earlier in sort of like the workshop? So we set out to basically isolate or to identify 8 different styles. And so we did that, and then we created an algorithm to measure it. And then we created an online app that people can go online, take this assessment, and then it pops out a play style. We find that the assessment works best if people have a workshop first so that they understand first, like what the definition of play is, so that they can then think about how to, because it's really kind of, you know, a lot of people, if you ask adults, do you play? They're going to say no until you educate them on what play is. And then they realize, oh, okay, well, I do play. And so having sort of like this kind of bit of a workshop at the beginning to explain the definition of play and define it for people so they understand what play is, then taking them through the assessment. And then after they take the assessment, we have like a workshop to validate it. And that workshop, again, we use the Lego, we also use pictures, we also use words, we use all kinds of things for people to start feeling. It's basically a way to bring the inside to the outside for exploration by self, but also to share that with others and compare and contrast to have those deeper conversations about how teams function and how people work. But I think that the key behind why it's so valuable is that it really helps people think about what makes them happy and how they can work happy and how they can, you know, we always say, you know, play smart, work happy, which is really kind of like, oh, okay, so if I did this differently, I might be happier at work, which is really what we want people to think about.
So you know a little bit of my history and how I designed my own position at Intel.
Yes.
And so one of the things I always tell people is that very, very few jobs are 100% set in stone, true to the job description as it was written.
Right.
There's almost always room to tweak, change, adjust, add, subtract, and still meet the goals and requirements of that position. So I think this knowledge of, you know, like you said, how you play, what makes you happy, maybe what doesn't make you happy, could be really useful as you're having those conversations with your manager and your team,
right?
And how you divvy up those tasks and that work.
Well, and also where you could ask for help. Mm-hmm. I think that this is the other part of, if we can understand more about ourselves, then we can accept ourselves as we are and recognize that, you know, we can't all be fabulous at everything. There are some things that we constantly struggle with and we need help. But I think that asking for help is really difficult for people. I think that especially people in the work that we're in, you know, therapists, doctors, facilitators, coaches, I think they love to help, but don't necessarily like to be the one asking for help and being on the other side of that. So I think that there's a certain amount of vulnerability, which can only happen if you have psychological safety. And I know I hear that term being thrown around a lot, and I think, I wonder if people even know what that means. But I think that being able to be in a place where you are feeling that you are able to express yourself and be heard, seen, and understood, and there's not going to be any kind of negative ramifications for it, and you're able to bring your authentic self, if you are able to do that, and I think that these playful workshops allow for that. I think the ground rules set up a parameter so that people can feel safe. And I think that the facilitator is constantly watching to facilitate that safe place. And and I think that doesn't happen at work very often. So when people are in one of these environments, they can start to feel like, you know, they can take their guard down a little bit in order to be able to express themselves more and to be able to have the room to think about, what do I really think about? You know, we don't take time to think about how we think. We might think about what we're thinking about, but we don't necessarily take time to think about how we think about things. And I think that these workshops allow people that time to kind of have that pause and reflection in order to be able to go forward. I mean, we're not machines, we're humans. And when I think about how unhuman so many workplaces are, it's kind of scary. And I think that it's really employers' responsibility in so many ways. I think that It is your, if you employ humans, it really is your responsibility to think about how those humans can come to work, enjoy being at work, reach their full potential within that environment, and actually not just support the organization, but support themselves so they can be the best that they can be. And I think that play is really the key to being able to do that.
Yeah, I agree. And what's really nice about these kinds of workshops, these more creative workshops, is it really forces people to step away from the norm. Like I often try to make the room, even if I'm on campus in a normal workshop room or big conference room, I still try to make it feel different. So I bring colorful posters. I try to, you know, have snacks and just make it feel like a different environment.
You know, bringing in food, having decent coffee, all of this, having a good room, having good lighting. We play music, and I know that you probably do too, Sarah.
Yeah.
So having that music, which is not just for ambiance, all of these things are created in order to allow people to feel more relaxed, to open their minds, and to start thinking about things in a different way. And you can't do that if you're going to be in the same old room with, you know, often a lot of these hotels, the boardrooms have no windows, which is a huge pet peeve of mine.
Yeah.
Because we know that we have windows and people can see outside, they are able to imagine greater things than if you are in a small dark room with fluorescent lighting. Mm-hmm. Even just saying it's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that the kind of the room, the setup of the room, and the support that the facilitator has going in is really important too. Mm-hmm. So somebody has to support you and believe enough in what you're doing in order to be able to set the stage, because setting the stage is part of the, it's going to be a component to supporting you to reach those outcomes that people say they want. And in many cases, organizations will sabotage their own outcomes by not thinking about those things.
Yeah. I like, if I'm going to be facilitating, I like to think of myself as a guardian of the experience, of the whole experience. So not just the agenda and making sure we get to the objectives that we have, but again, setting up the right environment for creativity, for safety, for collaboration.
The right, 100%.
Yeah, all the components, the right tech, you know, making sure you test your technology if you're going to be using it, all that stuff matters.
You know, it's funny, Sarah, because I often, you know, use the term that we're like the DJ at the wedding, you know?
Yeah.
Somebody goes to all this work to fly all of these executives into a location, and we're all going to go to some very expensive hotel. And then we're all going out for dinner and wine tasting, and all of these things that we're going to do are sort of like on the outside. And then, oh yeah, we're going to have a meeting and we're going to bring in a facilitator. But I'll tell you, the one thing that people remember after they leave is how that meeting went. Mm-hmm. Because people that are sitting there are thinking, is this a waste of my time? Am I going to get what I need out of this meeting? And when they do, when they feel like, oh my gosh, not only was I able to talk about what I really think, I had time to think about what I really think, I was able to share that with others, I was able to hear from them, now we're able to get alignment in what it is that we're going to do. We made some big decisions. We've created a time, a plan, some kind of an action plan with a time frame, with milestones, and we're actually going to move things forward. That is so energizing.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, sure, let's all go out for a glass of wine afterwards. But if you don't do that, then when you go out for your dinner, or your glass of wine, what are people talking about? What a waste of time this was. Mm-hmm. What a waste of money. And that kind of thing is dehumanizing. So I think that when people think about, oh, we're going to bring everybody together for an offsite, taking the time to think about how are we going to, as you say, be the guardian of the experience and also be the guardian of time, because it is in the time that we're all sitting there that we need to move things forward so that people can feel less anxious and more in control of what it is that they're doing and what's being asked of them. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's also part of the outcome of why this works so well, is that people leave and feel like that was amazing. I mean,
each person directly has input.
And that's what
they know their
need.
Voice was heard. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that using play and playful methods, everything has changed since, let's say, the early 2000s, when people looked at me like I had two heads when I said I was going to do this. I used to have to sneak everything in.
Yeah.
You know, like if I was going to bring anything playful, it was sort of like, it was never on the proposal.
Well,
it was
it's
never
funny,
talked about.
Because I feel like I have to go back to doing that now because of the economic environment. And everything is being cut and serious. I feel like I have to change the way I market myself, at least internally right now, to be very serious. But then I'm still going to sneak in the fun stuff. Probably shouldn't say that on the podcast if I'm going to be sneaky.
Yeah, if you're not, it's not good to advertise you're sneaky.
Well, the people listening to this already know that.
That's right.
So wink, wink.
That's right. Well, I think that one of the things that I tell people anyway is don't sell the tools or the process. Sell the outcome. Mm-hmm. So everybody wants the same outcome. And if we always go to the outcome, like what is the purpose of the meeting? What would you like to see decided? Is there something you'd like accomplished? If you go to that, and then one of the things that we do all the time is we leverage one story for another. So we will tell people about some of the things that we've done that have been incredibly impressive, where we have, taken an organization that was making, $1 million a year and turned them into a $10 million a year organization, or took some kind of a tech that was undeveloped and turned it into a $1 billion brand. I mean, we will tell those stories, not for the purpose of bragging, but just to get people to go, okay, there's value here. Mm-hmm. And maybe there's something here that I could use. Mm-hmm. That is something that we do in order to continue to pave that pathway to do the work that we need to do. We don't give them our agenda. We don't say, oh yes, from 9 until 9:30, we're gonna be building a tower and putting a minifigure on it. We don't tell people that. So the way that we explain what the agenda is and how we're gonna get there. Now, our best clients, who are favorite clients, who we love to go and work for, they weren't our favorite in the beginning. In the beginning, they were very suspicious. They were very not sure. Especially people that are in a position where they're bringing you in to do some kind of a workshop, if it doesn't go well, it is embarrassing for them. So those people are usually very cautious the very first time they work with us. But then over time, so we've been working with one client, the city of Surrey, since 2010, and it's now 2023, and we're going to work with them again next month. We have been working with them ongoing. We know the team that brings us in. A lot of people in the organization know who we are. There's this huge relationship of trust that has occurred over time, because they know that they can just very quickly tell us what they want the outcomes to be, and they know we're going to deliver. And they're always sort of like around for the journey.
Yeah.
Those kinds of clients, I wish I had hundreds of them, because those are the kinds of clients that are going to enable you to do what you can do in order. They're going to be happy. You're going to be happy at the end of the day. But
without
it takes time to get there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Without being, like, oh, I don't know about this.
Yeah.
I mean, the last thing you need when you're going and you're using one of these, more playful approaches, is to have the leader who brings you in not support you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because the leader really, and this is what I love about the city of Surrey, is their city manager is incredibly supportive. And he tells people this is really important, and it's going to be something different. You're not going to have done this before, and you need to just, show up 100% and be here, because great things are going to happen. Mm-hmm. And it sets a stage then for great things to happen.
Yeah.
Versus, you know, somebody that says, yeah, I don't know, you know, Sarah taught me into doing this and I'm not sure if it's going to work or not. So, but we'll see. Go ahead, Sarah.
Yeah.
And process.
Yeah. Okay.
Let me see what I can do. Yeah. So I think that, you know, I think that that's really key as well. It's not, you know, like we've talked about the room and the space and the mindset. It's also the supportive leadership mm-hmm. that is also key to making this kind of approach work.
Yeah, for sure. It sets the stage to allow you to win over the skeptics in the room and turn them into your best advocates too, and just have, yeah.
And that is definitely what happens. I think mm-hmm. that, you know, when I told that story about that first, the first time I had used Lego Serious Play, there were some people in the room that were like, that had that look on their face, like, all right, like I have, you know, I'm sure whatever you're going to do isn't going to be impressive, you know, mm-hmm. that look. That then over the course of the day, they're like constantly surprised. I mean, maybe their expectations were so low that it was easy. It was easy to meet them. But at the end of the day, then they're the ones.
The ones following you around.
They're the ones. They're asking for your business card. They're telling you, you got to call the guy at, you know, this place. And I got a friend who needs you. They're the ones that are. And I think for me, when I first saw that, because I really didn't have any, I didn't know, you know, I had no expectations. I had no idea how it was going to unfold. As that started to happen, I started to realize, you know, this has the ability to transform the way people think. Mm-hmm. And that then, as soon as we can start, and I think it starts with language, we start to change the language. When the language changes, the thinking changes. Mm-hmm. And as soon as the thinking changes, the behavior starts to change. And as soon as the behavior changes, you know, you have the ability to take the ball and run with it. Mm-hmm. Because you then start getting this positive energy that's sort of behind you that encourages you to keep going, but that also starts to pave the way for the next opportunity that you might have mm-hmm. to use something that is completely not traditional. And I, you know, have to say that if you look at our website, we've got pictures of people, you know, wearing funny hats, and we've got all kinds of stuff on our website, but when we say hello in the morning and they don't know who we are, stepping into the creative process, we always dress professionally. We mm-hmm. take professional material with us. It's not, we go in, we let them know right away why we're here, what the outcome is going to be. And we explain to them that we're going to be doing something different, and we invite them into that, mm-hmm. that space. I think that there's a misconception that, you know, because we're using play, we're silly people. And the opposite is true. We use lots of statistics that have been well researched and journaled. We don't exaggerate. We make sure the things that we say, we can back them up mm-hmm. with proof. And we slowly are able to, you know, people start to realizing, okay, these people know what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. These people are working for the US Air Force. These people are working for Procter & Gamble. These people have trained at Ernst & Young. Whatever kind of story we're telling starts to pave the way that it's like, okay, maybe I can do it too. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Yeah. How you position doing something different, a little bit unorthodox, it seems like it's unorthodox anyway, it's really important. Yeah. It's a good reminder.
Yeah. And that whole reminder of always, like, when we take material in, everything doesn't look like I, you know, pulled it out of my kid's toy box.
Yes.
It is all professional. Everything's packaged. Mm-hmm. Everything is clean. Everything is organized. Everything is coming out sort of one stage after the next mm-hmm. in a way that unfolds so that people are like, okay, and the brain loves the fact that things are different every couple of 15 minutes. Every 15 minutes is like another thing that we're going to do. Now we're going to do this. And people are like, they can't anticipate what is coming next, but they are hopeful that, you know, that this is going to happen. And then when it starts to happen, it starts to kind of meet all of their needs for autonomy and mm-hmm. for, you know, for everything to be fair and things to be orderly and organized and systemized to the point where they start to feel like they are falling into that flow mm-hmm. in such a natural way. And then if they look back at the day and go, oh, look what where we started, like, look what we built, look what we've done, look what we've talked about. It's kind of like the most amazing experience, but you could never have told them that at the beginning at mm-hmm. 9 o'clock. You mm-hmm. could never have said, this is what you're going to feel like at 5 o'clock, because they have to go through it.
Yeah. I always remember, so the first intro training that I took with Strategic Play, Stephen was the trainer who works for Jackie, and he described it as setting up a game show. So there's lots of, like, it's very well planned. The flow of the sessions are very well planned, but there's, like, little surprises or unexpected turns along the way to keep everyone on their toes and really engaged. And I love that description.
I think that we have to remember that adults are really like big babies. I mean, we think that kids don't listen, adults don't listen, they don't pay attention, and they get bored really quickly. And I'm sure that that's because we have fast everything now. Mm-hmm. So I think that one of the things we want to be mindful of is that we don't want people sitting and staring at a computer screen for a whole meeting. I mean, our office was at a hotel in Whistler, and I used to walk by this big meeting room and I'd look in and I used to think, oh, awful. Like, there's a PowerPoint, there's a table set in a horseshoe, there's everybody staring at the PowerPoint, making notes, drinking coffee. And I'm sure they might have been doing something really important. I have no idea, but just the look of it, I'm like, I'm so glad I'm out here. Freedom. I'm not in there. I'm not a prisoner.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, we know that if we want to get the most out of people, then we need to be conscious of the fact that you can only sit for so long. Mm-hmm. You can only look at a computer for so long. And the more you switch those things up, the easier it is for people to be able to think at these high levels.
Mm-hmm. Which is tricky over Zoom. We have to change how we do things now in a virtual world.
Mm-hmm.
But this has been wonderful, Jackie. Thank you so much for taking the time. Lots of good insights and information from you today. I like to end each episode. I didn't prepare you for this, so if you need to think for a second, that's okay. But I like to plan or end each episode with a challenge for the listeners.
Okay.
So I'm wondering if you have anything you would like, a challenge you'd like to pose to the listeners for them to tap into their creativity or playfulness in some way.
A really easy challenge is that I want you, if you are in a car driving somewhere, then or you're going somewhere, I want you to take a completely different route that you've mm-hmm. never taken before.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty easy one. So do it, you know, go a different way, maybe get lost, not too lost, but that I think that's really important. I was just reading something that was talking about brain development, and doing things the same way that we always do is really a trap. So that would be my first thing. I mean, mm-hmm. if any routine that you do, if you could do it differently, whether mm-hmm. it's your workout routine or the way that you make a meal, do it differently, do it backwards and see what happens. My harder challenge for everybody is I would like you to think about something that brought you joy that you did when you were a child. Think about how you played when you were 10. Try to go back to when you were 10 years old and think about how you played. And then I want you to take an hour and play like that again,
mm-hmm.
whether it's by yourself or with a child, it doesn't matter. But if you were one of those kids that like making things, make something. If you like playing a game with rules, play a game. If you just like running around playing tag, then go outside and find someone and tag them. But I think that one of the things that we do as we get older is we lose touch with our natural play state, which holds a key for how we should work. And mm-hmm. this is an entire body of work that we're working on right now, but which is that placenality mm-hmm. work that we're doing. But I think that if you, the more time you can spend about what brought you joy when you were 10, 11 or 12, and how you could bring the seeds of that into the work mm-hmm. that you're doing now, that would be my challenge. And mm-hmm. I think every single one of us should be challenged with that.
Yeah. Wonderful. Well, thanks, Jackie.
You're welcome. Thank you, Sarah. Thank you. And I know that you have lots of friends that are hanging out in this play space. And I just, I'm so appreciative that other people are like, you know, taking the challenge and thinking about what they can do to bring play and elevate the idea of play for more people to think about. Because I really do think that if people have more time to play, we're not just going to be more productive at work, but we're going to be happier humans.
Mm-hmm. And healthier.
Happier, healthier humans that are better parents, better mothers, daughters, sisters, husbands, uncles, friends, neighbors, which is going to make the world a better place. So play, I don't believe, is just something that we're using for productivity. I believe that play is really what we need in order to bring back into our lives to make us more human.
Mm-hmm. 100% agree.
All right.
Thank you.
This has been a pleasure, Sarah. Thank you.
All right. Till next time.
Okay.